Yeah, so anyway, I hadn't appreciated that, and therefore I didn't really have enough money saved up. So suddenly I was having to balance 0% credit cards and things like that. And then not only was I having to save money for next year's tax and the year after tax, but I was also back paying my tax. Yeah, that took me a good couple of years to, like, unravel.
That was Steve reflecting on the whole finance thing of being self-employed. The kind of impact that that has on your cash flow and the surprising tax bills that you've got to settle, save money for, and different ways that you've got to make sure you've got that security in place. Fascinating insights by Steve in this podcast interview. He's a fellow freelancer, and you really do need to check out his video log. Vlog his podcast for freelancers as well. But in the meantime, listen to my interview with him. You might learn something.
Staying Alive UK. Share your story.
Welcome to the Share Your Story podcast, Steve. How are you today?
I am well. Thanks for having me.
Really great to have you on the podcast. I'm a massive fan of the work that you do, particularly your vlog, your podcast. I'm learning loads of stuff. And I have to say also, it is so great to see someone who's sharing about the work that they do in a very vulnerable and authentic way. And, you know, most of the time you see people talking about their work and their business and it's all like, yeah, everything's great. I've got no problems. I'm, you know, doing all the things I need to do. And it's not real. And what you've done in your communication online, I think, yeah, shows that it's real. So thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, there's no point pretending.
No, exactly. Exactly. And it's very refreshing. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, but we're going to start right at the beginning. And my first question I ask everybody is, tell us a little bit about your personal life. And with that, I mean, where were you born? Have you moved around the world anywhere or the UK? A bit about your education, your journey through school, how that all went. And then we'll take you to where you now live. And then we'll get into the kind of work thing and the detail of that.
Well, on the plus side, this story is not exotic. it is very short in that I was born in Hertfordshire, which is just north of London in the UK, and that's where I still am. Other than like a few years at university down on the south coast of England, and maybe a year living in London, I've lived out in Hertfordshire. So that's where I am. That's kind of it. I did the whole school thing. School was good, enjoyed school, did A-levels and went to university to do media production. Because I always wanted to work in radio, that way, like even when I was 8.
Wow.
That was kind of, I remember we had to write our, at primary school, we had to write our biographies as if we were older. And I said I was a DJ for Radio 1, working on the chart show, because I used to love that show at the time, and that I had run the London Marathon. And I came to my senses about running the London Marathon. But I did actually become a DJ and end up working on the radio. And whilst I obviously didn't host the Top 40, I did work on it as an assistant producer. So I did kind of do that as well. I went to uni, did media production, which was also video, TV stuff. I mean, this was just as the internet was kind of kicking off. So it was like 97, I suppose, 98. Yeah. I remember they gave us email addresses and none of us knew what to do with them, put it that way. And I also remember seeing, like, because this was like the first .com bubble type thing. There was a website someone showed me in one of the computer rooms. That kind of dates it, the fact that there was a room for computers rather than all of us having one.
Yes.
So I remember somebody showing me a website where you could buy shoes online. And like you could revolve the shoe and look at the shoe, and I was like, who would buy trainers off a computer?
Yes. This is,
and now, of course, I buy everything off of a computer. Yeah. I wish I'd had a bit more open mind in this to that scenario. So yeah, so I did video and audio, and then I worked for a radio station down there, not like a student one, the actual.
Was that your first job then, straight in after uni, or?
Well, kind of. I did bits of radio when I was like maybe 14, 15 out where I lived.
Wow.
Like community radio type stuff. Yes. And I did hospital radio and things like that, which was kind of like that was kind of the route into radio.
Yes.
Back then. And then, yeah, while I was actually still studying, a new radio station launched. And so I wrote to them and said, can I have a job? And they gave us a show in the evening, and then I used to cover shifts during the day as well. That was kind of what I did. But as I came to the end of my studies, a new radio station was launching in Hertfordshire, where I was obviously from, and the guy who was running that had actually seen me when I was 14 doing a show, and had always wanted to launch a radio station, and had remembered my name and tracked me down to see if I was still doing radio. And offered me a job. so actually my first job out of university was on the radio, like a newly launched station. So literally we were having to add the songs onto the computers and stuff like that. And it was great, really. That was kind of my route in, and then I stayed at that same place for probably 12-13 years.
Wow.
Before going self-employed. Yeah, I know. Somewhere along the line, probably in amongst the early starts, a little bit of ambition must have gone, I think, because I think I got comfortable, and also I started off like doing a mid-morning show and scheduling adverts. But by the end, I was doing the breakfast show, and I was also the program manager. And, you know, so it's not like I just stayed in the one role. But effectively, I just stayed at that one station. But what I did used to do was pretty much for the whole time was freelance on the side.
Yes.
So I mentioned earlier that I assisted, produced on the chart show. But that was because I wrote to, like, independent production companies in London and basically did some work experience for free, and then when they liked me enough, cheekily said, can you pay me to do some of this as well? So I started making documentaries and working on various shows that they made. So I did freelance work on the side. I started doing script writing. I had knew some people in the BBC by then, so they invited me to do script writing for some projects, online projects as well.
Yes, yes.
And then I did copywriting for them. So I was always dabbling in extra things on the side, but it wasn't necessarily because I felt I needed the income. It was just so that I felt I was flexing, my creativity, or not feeling like I was staying in one place, even though I blatantly was.
Yes. So presumably the job at the radio wasn't a full day, or how did that work?
Well, it kind of was. It was, it would have been like an 8-hour.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It would have been like a 9-to-5, except that, I mean, for most of it, I was working maybe from 5 a.m. until, half one or two or whatever it would have been.
Right.
So, yeah, by the time we had kids, I used to duck out of there at about 12 and then get home and pick up our son from nursery so I could look after him in the afternoon. But even then, I would still be doing some freelance writing on the side.
Yes.
At that point as well. I remember sitting on the bus on the way to pick him up, writing, writing for radio prep services and stuff. So
freelancing got into your blood at quite an early stage then, didn't it?
Yeah, it felt like, a lot of the media industry, I guess, is probably freelance. But I remember it was just that whole thing of if I wanted to do like work for big radio stations or work on big things, then that, yeah, that was the way in. So yeah, it felt quite natural to be earning money that way.
Brilliant. So, and then the transition, what finally convinced you then to move away from the radio station?
Yeah, so I remember one of my friends had come across something called People Per Hour. He was hiring people through one of those freelance job sites for his company. And he said, you should put yourself on there as a writer. So I did that. And when you fill in your profile, you know, I was saying I'm also a presenter and I can edit video and audio and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
And it was actually People Per Hour themselves who decided to make some videos. And they, so I was doing writing work, but they were looking for videos. And so they decided to search their own database and found like camera people, but they found this bloke who could present.
Yes.
Me. And so I presented a video for them. But then I basically said to them, look, you know, I could also, as well as doing this, I could script it and I could present it and I could also edit it. And so, yeah, basically I persuaded them to give the whole shebang to me.
Yeah.
And I hired a videographer to film for me. And then I started making videos for them that way.
Yes.
And so that sort of became a regular bit of income. Mm. And then online video was taking off at the time. This is about, I don't know, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I was getting more work online to do with making videos, both online and actually in the real world, real people that I was meeting. Like maybe I might go around a trade show and interview people from there, because that was something I did for People Per Hour, and so people saw that.
Yeah.
And so all of these things were sort of building income, they were building confidence, but they were also taking up more and more time. So it was getting to the point where maybe I might be up until like 11 or 12 o'clock at night. But then getting up at 4 a.m. to go and do a breakfast shift on a radio station, as well as then looking after our son in the afternoon. So I was just getting, yeah, you can't do that for too long. And then that kind of tied in with us having our second child and us contemplating what life would be like when my wife went back to work. Like, did we want to do the whole, you know, like, how would we drop the kids off? Our son was about to start school, so... like, would he go to a breakfast club? And we, whilst there's, you know, nothing wrong with that, lots of people have to do it. We thought maybe we don't have to do it.
Mm.
Maybe I could. I've got all this work. Maybe there's more work out there. And so, yeah, that's basically when I handed my notice in and decided to concentrate on doing video and audio for businesses, which is what I do now. And I thought I would probably be, you know, doing bits of script writing for people, little bits and pieces of video production, you know, sort of selling my skills in that way. And over time, it's kind of developed into more, you know, I don't just hire videographers, but I also hire animators and I hire other script writers and other voiceover people. So it's not all based on my talent or skill or skill set.
Yes.
But I hire other people so that we can do bigger and better and more creative things. And so, yeah, it's really grown over the past four or five years.
And you don't, and again, those people are also freelancers again. So you keep it within that freelance network or?
Yeah, so I don't employ anyone. No. They're all freelancers based on the project, even though I collaborate regularly with a lot of particular people.
Yes.
It is all based on the sort of freelance model, as it were. And then a huge chunk of my day is still based around the kids, around being there in the morning and dropping them. They're now both at school.
Yeah.
So dropping them both at school and being there at, you know, 3:30 or whatever to pick them up in the afternoon.
Yes.
So, yeah, I work intensely during the day and then maybe in the evening if I need to. And then alongside that, do my podcast where I interview different freelancers. And then I do the vlogs, as you mentioned, as well. So, and articles and things.
Yeah, that's you're packing a lot in because, I mean, I guess not everybody knows how much time it takes, but I mean, I know on your website you say, oh, I produced this vlog on my iPhone. You can do that too for your business. And I'm like, I'm kind of going, yeah, I'd love to do it. But, and I'm kind of looking at how you produce it. And I can see the clips. I can see the kind of the feet. I can see the camera in the trees when you're running past. I notice all of these things and I'm going, there's no way I can do that. It takes so much time. And then having to edit it all together with the music, with the bits and pieces coming in and out, and some of the intro, which is like the summary of all of the things. And I'm going, yeah, I suppose in a roundabout way, I'm saying you're pretty good at what you do.
Well, the thing is, though, you see, is that I like video and audio is my job.
Yeah.
Right. So it is totally possible for people to film with iPhones. That my whole vlog is filmed. So it's in HD, but it's on an iPhone. It looks amazing when it's got good light.
Yes.
So which is why a lot of it I film walking outside. But okay. So I'm an editor, but that's a skill that I've picked up over time and I've developed through practice and doing it.
Yes, of course.
And you look at basically any YouTube. I don't call myself a YouTuber, but if you look at any YouTuber, they are all people who have most of the time self-taught themselves to edit.
Yeah. Stuff.
And a lot of vlogs aren't as intricate as mine are. You know, I try and fit a whole week into filming each day into like under 10 minutes.
Yes.
Which is why I keep it so fast moving. I do think keeping it fast moving keeps it watchable for a long period of time. But a lot of things, they don't have to be that long. They don't have to be that fast. It could be, you know, some people have one fixed camera and then they cut between it. You know, you just watch different people's styles.
Yeah.
And ultimately, if you were doing it for a business, you could hire someone to do that for you.
Yeah.
So I was helping a girl who was launching a new like hair brand, and I suggested to her that she should vlog about it so that her audience would get into it, like buy into her product before she even had a product to sell.
Mm.
And you know, she could film herself going around and, you know, behind the scenes stuff of what she was doing using her phone, but then give it to somebody else. You know, someone like me, for example,
yes,
to edit it.
Right.
So then you're hiring a professional who will take it, you know, a fraction of the amount of time that you would.
Yeah.
But you end up with a video, but you've still filmed it yourself. Mm. But also I encourage her to get on like Instagram stories, for example, and just get comfortable being on the camera and filming things. And you soon start to realize, you know, different angles and what might be interesting and what gets a reaction from people. So it doesn't, you know, vlogging doesn't have to be a YouTube video. It could be just doing daily stories on Instagram.
Yes.
As well, in which case you don't have to edit it at all.
Mm.
You're just putting it out as you go along.
Yeah, and you're right. There are many different ways of tackling that, that's for sure. And I think also these days it's about how do you make it watchable, that people want to watch it, because not only is the content interesting, it's also an engaging and well-produced bit of content. Because it also fine that people can go and talk on camera, and you see a lot of Facebook Lives, and Facebook Live was really super interesting to begin with, what people were doing, but now they're just kind of waffle on for like half an hour and you're bored after 2 minutes. People just talking on camera nonstop is now, people haven't got the attention span, do they? They want something that is reasonably quick, but also how do you keep there? And it comes back to something I'm passionate about and you are as well, which is storytelling. You know, once you tell a story, you tell your story about what's going on in your life as a freelancer in your business. And it's an interesting story to watch and witness what's going on.
So yeah, for sure. Stories are important. And in fact, recently I gave speaking a go, you know, at events and conferences and stuff.
Yes.
And that was new to me. And so I started studying it. And I began to realize that the best, you know, conferences or, sorry, best presentations I was watching were the ones which had a story, a strong story right at the beginning, or maybe different ones woven through it.
Yes.
And it was always the stories that would pull you back in if you were starting to drift off. And yeah, that's why, like, doing the vlog the way I do it is, yeah, it kind of works. Like, in amongst it, you get to pick up on, I guess, lessons or things that I'm, you know, learning or realizing myself or be entertained. But it's that's why Instagram stories, being called stories, isn't a bad thing, like, because it is a little snapshot of your day. And the best ones are people who are, like, telling some sort of narrative, something to hook you in. As far as what you said about, like, Facebook Live and stuff getting boring, but, you know, that really is about what's the purpose of doing it in the first place.
Yes.
So it's never going to work if you've got no point to be doing it. But equally, if somebody was teaching you something that you were finding useful, then you'd probably stay gripped.
Yeah.
So, you know, what those, you know, a good introduction to a live video or any video in a way would be to say, especially a live one though, is to say, you know, hello, and here's what is coming up. So maybe tell a story, but here's what's going to come up and here's what you're going to learn. And therefore, in hearing that, you're thinking, oh, okay, I'm going to stay listening because I want to find out how this is going to do that or the other to me or my business or my family or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
If it's just somebody rambling because they're next to the pool for the sake of it, then yeah, you'll probably get bored and switched off.
I must have touched on a few that were like that and went, okay, I've had enough of this. But you're right that an introduction is vitally important just to give people a flavour. And then it's a bit like a news story, isn't it? People say on the news, they say, these are the headlines, this is what's coming up, and then they get into the news and then they summarize it at the end again.
I think you've got to think it through. If you're going to bother doing a live thing, you've got to have a reason to do it. There's a really good one that I watch pretty much every week is by she calls herself Social Pippa Akram. So she's a social media consultant. But every Friday at midday, she will do a Periscope Live. So on Twitter, she goes live. And she basically does half an hour chatting about the latest developments in social media. So what the platforms are doing and how that could have an impact on your small business and what you could learn from it and things like that. And obviously, there's a lot of interaction, both live and afterwards as well.
Yeah.
So she has a purpose. She's not just jumping on there and chatting about her dog or her kitchen development. You know, like, there's a real reason for her to do it, and she's made proper notes and she works her way through it just like a TV show kind of. So yeah, if you expect people to give up their time to watch, I think it's worth spending a bit of time thinking about what it is you're gonna do to them. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time too.
Yeah. So and I know people can, the best way for people to find out, you know, and see what's going on in your business and life is to go and watch the vlog. But a lot of people, this may be the first time that they're hearing about you. So what would be, if you don't mind, how long have you been doing the freelancing now?
4.5 years.
4.5.
Like,
okay.
As in full time.
Full time, yeah. So not that long. So what? I mean, that was almost like setting, and I know you've been doing some of it on the journey, but kind of 100% doing freelancing for the past 4.5 years or so, let's call it 5. So what have been some of the highlights for you over those past 5 years in terms of doing it in the way that you've been doing it?
I think a few things have been like realizing the potential of like working with other people. One of those came quite early on when somebody asked me if I could, they sent me an email and they said, can you do this style of animation for us? And I was quite honest. I said, no, but I work with somebody who can, let me get back to you, blah, blah, blah. And that was the very first kind of project where I became a bit like a producer, a project manager. I was bringing in other talents to work with me to create something for somebody. And actually, it was a video which we ended up getting translated into maybe 15 languages because they were launching across Europe. So I had to find all the different translators and all the different voiceover artists for all of those countries. And yeah, it was kind of like a realization that that was possible, but it didn't have to be about me. But I could harness the skills of other people. And so I approached an animator who had approached me previously to write scripts for him and do voiceovers for him. This time it was me hiring him, and we still work together today very closely. Another time was just before we were due to go on holiday a couple of years ago, when I'd been sort of working on a pilot for an internal training scheme for a bank, and we were about to film a load of videos, and I'd got 7 scripts together for those videos. And just before I was due to go on holiday, they decided they liked them so much that they wanted to double it. They wanted like 15 videos. And so I was kind of torn because, you know, to be honest, I needed the money and I didn't want to turn it down because I thought, well, they'll go and find somebody else to do it. And then this project might never come back and it has potential to go on for years.
Yes.
So I thought, well, I either turn it down or I tell my family I'm going to be missing the first few days of this holiday. You go off on your own and I'll just work on this. But actually what I ended up doing was compromising and hiring another writer. So that was the first time I'd hired another writer.
Yes.
And so for the next 3 days, he was working on them. I got up early and wrote scripts. He wrote them. He sent them to me. I edited them, sent them to the client. They were happy. They filmed them and I got on with my holiday. But that relationship meant that actually the next batch of videos was 30 and then it was 50. And instead of just being me and one other writer, we now have like a team of 6 writers. And it was that, yeah, it was that moment where I was kind of like prioritizing family, but realizing I could bring on other people to work with me.
Mm.
And so still make the money, still make the client happy, but still actually have time with my family as well. So that was... yeah, that was a big thing, really. And that project is still ongoing today.
Which is brilliant. I love that story. I'm literally, at the moment, going through a program with Birmingham City University, which is called Growing You. And it's about small businesses looking at where they are in terms of their growth and how can they look at growing themselves even further. And one of the things, I did the third workshop this morning, and one of the things they talk about in these workshops in particular is value add and value add through the supply chain. So it's not just value add that you can bring to your business, but who else can bring the value add in your supply chain? And that's exactly what you're now describing. Is that often people think they've got to bring all the value add, but actually you've been able to add value to your business by using other people.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So I never studied business, but yeah, that's, it turns out that's what I did.
Yeah.
Through just realizing it and getting the pricing right was key to that, actually, like realizing that. The initial freelance mindset is that you bill for your time.
Yes.
That's kind of the starting point for most of us. But then you realize that actually you need to add a margin on top of that. So you need to start to think, well, what if I wasn't doing that work? If I was ill and I had to pay somebody else to do it, what am I going to still make? Or in my case, if I'm hiring another writer, like what is my margin on top of that? And then to stop feeling bad about it, because I still speak to freelancers for the Being Freelance podcast now, where they're like, they're almost apologizing for doing that step. And I think that's where, as freelancers, we need to think of ourselves as businesses.
Yes.
So the people who call themselves businesses or call themselves entrepreneurs kind of get over that hurdle a lot quicker, because they're already thinking, well, no, it's perfectly natural. I'm going to add something on top.
Yeah.
Because otherwise this business won't survive very long. So, yeah. And actually, since then, it's kind of like spotting opportunities. You know, I've gone to existing clients and offered more services. So we also offer document design or infographic design and translation services, dubbing services. So things which relate to the sphere of what I do, things I totally couldn't do myself, but that help them and sort of keep it all within my my business, my little sort of ecosystem that I've created. And actually, in a way, it's easier when you start hiring people who do things that you can't do. Because, so, you know, I can't animate. I can do a very little bit, but not, I can't really animate. But I can write a script. So it took me ages to think that I could give a script to somebody else. Mm. I can't translate. I can't do an infographic design.
No.
I can help them with the visual brief and outline, but I'm not a graphic designer.
No.
So it's a lot easier to start outsourcing things to people when you can't do it.
Mm.
Which again is where an entrepreneur who decides to design a new type of umbrella probably can't actually design. You know, they might come up with a design, but after that, they're going to have to give it to other people. They're not going to make 1,000 umbrellas themselves.
No.
They have to go and find somebody to do it for them. And so that's kind of where freelancers can come a bit unstuck, where they think they have to do it all themselves. And there's nothing wrong with doing it all yourselves. Not everybody wants to manage other people or take the risks, but it's certainly a way to grow your business.
Yeah. And is that the way you believe it will stay for you, that it's the freelance with freelancers route rather than, you know, building a studio and getting some premises and, you know, having a team in place?
Well, I think for now, for sure. And I also think, in a way, hiring premises and building studios will perhaps start to feel a little bit antiquated, like putting lots of people in buildings soon. It doesn't seem to make financial sense to me anyway. I work from home. I use a bit of co-work space. Why would I hire an office? Why would I take on the financial pressures of hiring staff when I can hire free, and not just for hiring freelancers, but hiring the best people to do the job wherever they are in the world?
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense, other than the fact that it's quite nice to do a tea round and have some cakes and a drink after work sometimes.
Mm.
But you can start to get that if you go to a co-work space. There are certain situations where, of course, it might make sense to have people come together in the same place.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you know, there's a lot of businesses now, the likes of Buffer, and I can't remember, ConvertKit and stuff, like companies who are being very explicit about the fact that their whole workforce is remote, and they come together maybe once or twice a year, but everything else is done remote. So that partly answers the question. I can still build a studio without physically having everybody in the same place. And in a way, it's kind of what I'm doing. I'm just letting things happen organically.
Yes.
But the moment, to my clients, it's still very much dealing with me. They know I work with other people, but it's still very much me.
And I guess, I mean, I know Buffer, and Buffer are the best example that you just mentioned, because I love what they stand for. I love their culture. I love the way that they have gone about doing it. And they did have premises, I think, in San Francisco for a while, and then they closed them because their ethos is you can live wherever you want in the world, basically, and do the work from there. And it is because so much can be done remotely, and it doesn't mean you can't have a meaningful business identity when people are dispersed. I guess the other thing as well, might be interesting your view on this, that if you are using other freelancers, it also gives you the flexibility, because if you had a team of people with skills, you might not have all the skills in the team, right? And you might be asked to do something, I don't know, filming from drones, and no one in the team can do filming with drones, but you need to go to a specialist. You need to go to a freelancer who can do filming with drones, for example.
Yeah, or you can kind of turn that on its head, like, and say, and I think this is all kind of like more dangerous, is the fact, but what if I invest in a load of drones and somebody who can fly drones and film with drones? Mm. And so then every time a client comes to me, I'm selling them a drone. I'm like, oh yeah, this video will look great with a drone in it, even though they don't need it.
Yes.
Because I've got it.
Yes.
And that's, you know, like I'll be saying, oh yeah, you want to have this animation look in this particular style because I have this animator who does that particular style.
Right.
Whereas I can be honest and pick the style that I think will suit that vision for the project or that vision for their budget, you know, and pick the animator within my team who ticks those boxes rather than forcing them to have a certain style because that's the person I've got on the payroll.
Yeah.
There are some businesses which will probably always have to be within businesses, within premises, particularly like manufacturing.
Of course.
But for particularly for creative industries, you really don't have to.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about the highlights. Were there some things in the last 5 years that could have been greater? So some challenges along the way?
I think the toughest thing early on was just not being, and I'm probably still not great at it, it's just finances.
Mm.
I hadn't, when I became self-employed, appreciated that whole thing of when you're a sole trader, you end up paying, you don't just pay your tax, you then have to pay a bit of next year's tax by the great wisdom of the way the tax system works.
Mm.
Whereas businesses, I've since discovered, because I'm now a limited company, have like a year in which to pay
yes.
their tax. Like it works in completely the opposite way.
Mm.
Yeah, so anyway, I hadn't appreciated that, and therefore I didn't really have enough money saved up. So suddenly I was having to balance 0% credit cards and things like that. And then not only was I having to save money for next year's tax and the year after tax, but I was also back paying my tax. Yeah, that took me a good couple of years to, like, unravel that. So I think if you were, you know, when you come from a PAYE being employed background,
yeah,
you're just not used to that kind of thing. It all just gets done for you. It does in our country anyway. Some countries people do pay their own taxes, but yeah, doing tax returns and stuff and being on top of that is really important to get right, and I didn't necessarily early on. And actually, for that matter, I think there was a big change when I became a limited company, was that from a mindset point of view, I started to feel more like a business.
Yes.
Even though technically, well, on paper, legally, stuff had changed. The way I was running my business hadn't, in theory, changed. But in my head, it begins to feel more like a business. And, you know, as soon as you, because when you start out, you might not have separate bank accounts. And, you know, if someone's listening and thinking of doing that, I would hugely recommend you do. Even as a sole trader, you know, keep those two things separate. It helps ingrain that business mentality, like use some financial software to keep track of your books. And it just makes everything feel a lot more professional and it keeps on top of the numbers, because there's nothing worse than those pressures of finance. So, yeah, that was probably the biggest challenge. And then as I was hiring other people, that then comes with the sort of risk of cash flow, I guess, because I would be hiring someone to do something. Maybe I'd pay them whatever their terms were, 7 days later, 10 days later, even if it was 30 days later, whatever it would be, my invoice to my client would always come later.
Mm.
So I would always have bills to pay before that. So, you know, that it takes a while for that to start to pay off, or it did for me, and for you to start to build up that buffer and bank of money where you feel comfortable about paying invoices early because you can, and treating people the way you want to treat them. Because, yeah, that's difficult, especially if you start dealing with really big corporations who might have 45-day terms or even 90-day terms and stuff like that, you know? Yeah. So you've got to sort of approach that the right way.
I think you mentioned the topic about money is definitely the biggest thing, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, people go into business to make money, and then it's usually the last thing we get our head around because we're so excited about the product, the servers, getting that right, getting our offer right, the pricing, the strategy and all. You know, even if we do it on the fly, we do want to get that bit right. And the money thing is often ignored. And you're 100% correct. I made exactly the same mistake. I had no financial system. Well, there weren't any online systems in those days. You had to either fork out for Sage, which cost a fortune, and you didn't have these cheaper versions that are now available. And I mean, it's like anything. Now is like the easiest time to start your own business with all of the services and resources that are available. Finance is probably the top priority to get right at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish I'd kind of, you know, got that better. And, you know, I still need to get it better. I could still probably hire someone to make sure they keep on top of all my expenses in full, just because it feels like a waste of my time filling in the spreadsheets and doing it online, all of that. But that said, one of my guests made a good point, is that even if you hire people to enter that input and you hire the accountant and all of that, you should never let yourself get too far away from what those figures are and knowing what's happening and where you're spending stuff and what your margins are and all of that. It's still worth sitting down and making sure you take time to understand them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, giving us some great nuggets. I'm enjoying it. Thank you. You've said some along the journey already, so which is great in our conversation. If you had to pick just one thing, apart from the finance, if there was one other thing that you think would be just a tip for somebody that's thinking about starting their own business, and in terms of at least giving them an opportunity to get it half right to start off with, could you think of another tip?
Oh my gosh. Well, I think a lot, I've come to realize that a lot of everything comes down to communication. And being honest as well, just sort of like integrity. So being honest with yourself, being honest with the people you hire, and being honest with your clients. You know, like most people, for example, if you've set a deadline and it looks like things are slipping, so long as you're honest about that, or honest about what, you know, what's happening, and realign their expectations by communicating it properly, then things go a lot smoother.
Yes.
So, it's not just business, obviously that's the same in personal relationships just as much, really. That communicating and setting expectations, people just want to know what's going on. So I think that can make a huge difference, and just really thinking about what your customer or your client is experiencing and what, you know, what their experience of you is like, I think is worth remembering, and keeping, making them feel special as soon as they've hit buy or whatever, however it might work in your business.
Yeah.
And thinking about that longer term customer experience, and they want to stay with you and they want to recommend you to people. And something I've realized from all of my various guests is just really how important those relationships are. And meeting people and connecting with people, not just your clients, but other people who will either recommend you, or you might end up working with, or it's not about networking as such. It's just about making relationships and meeting people.
Very, very important, yeah, advice. And I love the bit about the communication as well, because without it, you create mistrust. You know, if you don't communicate regularly, honestly, not just with your clients and suppliers and your network, but also communicating honestly with yourself, you know, that's vital as well. Steve, I'm conscious of time. If people would like to find out more about you, where are all the places, if you could share? I'll put it in the show notes anyway, but if you could share verbally where they can find you and learn more about you or maybe hire you?
Yeah, well, probably the best place is beingfreelance.com, because it will link through to my website. It's also the place where, as well as the podcast, you can see my vlogs, which will link through to YouTube. So lots of my writing and stuff, it's all in that one place. So beingfreelance.com. And on Twitter, I am at S Folland, FOLLAND.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. It's really great to speak to you. I will continue to enjoy and watch your many different productions and get inspired and learn from it. I'm still sitting on the fence, though, I have to admit, about the vlog, but maybe one day I'll get the courage to do that. So
do you do Instagram stories?
You know, you're going to put your hands over your face now or to your head. I have been on a journey over the last few months where I'm reducing the amount that I'm doing by not wanting to get distracted. So I have actually, I've stopped being active on Facebook. I've come off WhatsApp and I have come off Instagram. Mm,
interesting. Yeah.
So the only two places I'm active are LinkedIn. And by default, because I put stuff on LinkedIn, it goes to Twitter. So I'm not really that active on Twitter, just this kind of a news feed, I guess, a secondary news feed from LinkedIn. Yeah, I've become far more focused on where I want to build my relationships, because using LinkedIn, I can develop much closer relationships with people than I can do anywhere else. And I used to be a LinkedIn trainer. I stopped in December. For 5 years, I used to teach people how to use LinkedIn, but I decided in December I wanted to focus 100% on my storytelling business, which includes whiteboard animations. And therefore, I wanted to focus because I was getting distracted, to be honest. And it's part of my journey in terms of reducing, you know, wasting time, basically, because I found myself wasting time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, it's totally worth. If you know where your audience is, as in where your clients is, clients are, or potential clients, and if that's LinkedIn, then I think putting your weight into one platform rather than many is totally a smart move. It depends where they are. It's just such a mess, LinkedIn. That's what I always find, as to like that, how it shows you the stuff. Mm. Actually getting to know people, I find Instagram really really good for seeing people, but it totally depends what you do and where they are and how you use it and how the people you want to interact with use it. No worries.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, and I came off Instagram literally a couple of weeks ago, so it's all still quite new as well. And it's a kind of like fear of missing out or being delighted that I'm no longer there.
Oh, I bet it feels good. Yeah.
Steve, fantastic. And I would love to meet up with you over a coffee when you go into London. Maybe we could meet in London one day and have a further chat. That would be really great too. And but in the meantime, thanks for coming on the podcast and speak to you soon.
All the best. Thanks again.
Bye.
Staying Alive UK. Share your story.